Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we are going to be talking about the Thursday turd machine. We're going to be talking the little baseball, talking the Blackhawks start of the season, maybe a little more. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You could see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. The season is just days away, so make sure you head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, I have a confession to make.
Mm-hmm.
I did not watch the game until this morning.
Well, you didn't miss much live, that's for sure. And also, shout out to my brother and my sister-in-law, who were both at that game and had to endure the whole thing in person.
Yeah, that's brutal.
I
ended up, I had tickets for the opening of the new Halloween movie. And I'm like, oh, you know what? I'll come home and watch the replay of the game. And
they're both scary. So, you know,
and I was like, man, this Halloween movie is literally the worst horror movie I've ever seen in my life. And I'm like, oh, at least I can go home and watch the game, which will be better than this. And then I look at Twitter and apparently the game was not better.
Oh, I mean, it was just a whirlwind of frustration. And the game that I thought the Bears could really just put up the points, really get a nice, easy victory. I know the Bears aren't good and we've really been made aware of that, but the Commanders, I mean, even after that game, there's nothing about that game that say, yeah, the Commanders played well. They did not play well. The Commanders played terribly in that ball game, but they still came away with the win because we made more mistakes. We had more trips to the red zone. We had more yards, but in the end, the Commanders came away because we couldn't execute on the small things. And there were some really alarming stats that came from that game. And when I say alarming stats, I am looking at the offensive line and how much pressure Justin Fields is constantly under. Not only that, but you don't look at it just in the books, okay? You'd look at it watching the game. When Justin Fields, after every pass, they pan to him on television, on the ground, wincing in pain because he got hit yet again. Over and over and over. I mean, if anyone knows South Park, it's that Dan Snyder bit where it's just him versus the Dallas Cowboys. Hot, 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 hot. And then he just gets tackled every time, then gets back up. Hot, 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 gets tackled again. That was literally Justin Fields. He looks like a Family Guy meme. He's on the ground every time. I mean, it's alarming. I don't think he's going to make it the whole season.
Yeah, every time he got hit, it wasn't even like, you know, he got sacked. It was, he was getting hit hard, and it was like Peter Griffin on the ground going, ah.
Yeah, it was. It really was.
Yeah, I really thought that if I didn't know already the outcomes of things when I watched, I would have really thought that Fields was going to get, you know, carted off in this game.
I mean, there were moments where I thought, is Trevor Siemian going to be putting his helmet on and warming up here? Because there were some times where not only was Fields wincing, but he was kind of limping a little bit around after the play. You know, he couldn't walk or couldn't get up, but you could kind of see a bit of a limp in his step when he tried to get up. So he was clearly feeling the effects of those hits. And I saw a graph. I think they posted it after the game. I saw a graph where every team was marked, I think it was pressure efficiency or something like that. It's like sacks, pressure, whatever. Either way, it's all about protecting the quarterback, and the Bears were far and away on the wrong side of the graph. I mean, not even close to any of the other teams. Like, that's how bad it is. And then they posted a stat where he's seeing more pressures at a rate that is very abnormal, like worse than ever. And all I could think of the entire time is, Ryan Poles, you did what you had to do by tearing the roster down and going to a rebuild. I understand that. But how can you not prioritize the protection of the most important asset on your team, even if you're rebuilding? I mean, okay, so you don't spend it on wide receivers or pretty much any other position because you're going through a transition phase. Okay, but we really couldn't do more to address this offensive line. And why couldn't the coaches have created some consistency on the offensive line? What's with the rotating door stuff? Why are we still doing this?
Yeah, I mean, just because, all right, I understand that you're prioritizing youth. You're trying to build an offensive line that's young, and then everybody grows together. I understand that. But at some point, you're going to get your quarterback killed. It's Sam Mustipha is terrible. Lucas Patrick is not good at guard, and I don't see him being long on this team. Probably an off-season cut. But you know, you've got to work to move Lucas Patrick inside, and then I would probably kick Alex Leatherwood into the other guard position now that he's back from having mono, because you've got to do something to protect. You know, I would consider putting in Riley Reiff in for Larry Borum. And the problem is Braxton Jones has been meh. I mean, he's a rookie left tackle, a late round rookie left tackle. You're going to see struggles, but he struggled mightily against the Washington Commanders. And you know, the fact is when we were talking before the season started, when we talked about this game, we said this Washington defensive line is good. They're going to put pressure on. If the Bears can manage the pressure at all, they can win this game. And they couldn't manage the pressure. And the wide receivers on this team, there's like an old saying, it's like, you can have something done cheaply, you can have something done good, and you can have something done fast, but you can only have two of the three. So if you want it done fast, it's either going to be, you know, it's not going to be cheap or it's not going to be good. And if you want something cheap, it's not going to be good or it's not going to be fast. And that's kind of what we're seeing with the Bears is, you know, you can have, you know, you could have a bad offensive line, but you've got to have good weapons for your quarterback to make up for it. And if you don't have good weapons and you don't have a good offensive line, you're in trouble, because what you end up with is a quarterback, a young quarterback who is, you know, supposed to be learning the offense, learning to read progressions, and instead is starting to see ghosts, is getting banged up, and doesn't know what an open window looks like because his receivers are terrible.
I mean, it's just a bad mix all around. It's hard to develop a quarterback when you don't have any supporting cast around you outside of like running back and like one guy. But even so, your one guy who you usually rely on, who usually is reliable, he was the final hope for the Bears, and he flat out dropped it at the goal line. I mean, Darnell Mooney has been very, very good so far, but he did not come up with the big catch there, and that would have probably won the game right there. It just, it hurts when you see multiple opportunities to score touchdowns just go by the board because it's the little things. I mean, the first time Justin Fields throws a ball that's a little too low, it deflects off the helmet into the air and then picked. That's a situation where I say, you know what? Why not bootleg? Why not roll out where he can either roll out and look for somebody who's open or take it himself? I don't know why they don't roll out towards the end zone more. I mean, that's what I would do. We've seen in the past, Justin Fields scored touchdowns with his legs when he rolls out. So when they were in that situation where he threw the pick, I said, instead of passing in the pocket, why not roll out? Why don't they try that more?
A good play would be, it's a little bit slow developing, but you fake the handoff one direction and you do a naked boot to the other side, and you have two levels roll out and peel off the other direction, a wide receiver in the corner and a tight end underneath. And the odds of you having enough defenders to either to flush Justin Fields out, cover the tight end and cover the wide receiver going to the corner is real slim. And you're right. Absolutely. Use those legs. And, you know, honestly, your best bet with lack of talent is to make other teams have to make a bad decision or make a bad play. And having Justin Fields out on the edge at the goal line is going to be, you know, something that causes somebody to make an error. You know, you have a linebacker that's, or a defensive lineman or a linebacker that's coming after Fields. He's got to make the decision of, does he cut off the passing lane to the tight end, or does he go up and try to make the tackle on Justin Fields? And that split decision is probably going to be a mistake.
You know? Yeah. I mean, I just don't know why they didn't try that at least one of those times. I thought that was the perfect spot for it on that first drive, especially.
You know, your running game has been okay, but it's been pretty poor inside the 10-yard line.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we saw the great run by Khalil Herbert. That set everything up, and the Commanders were pretty good at stopping David Montgomery throughout most of the game. They had him read. Their run defense is solid on Washington. It's one of the few things they do decently well, so I mean, they were able to kind of contain that for quite a bit. But, you know, even so, you see situations where it calls for a run and the play call isn't necessarily bad, but you saw that run kind of get shut down a little bit at times during the game. And it's like, okay, well, you know, even if that the play calling makes sense, if they're shutting that down, then you got to make adjustments. And that's the whole thing. I mean, we saw the play calling in that one possession where they didn't score because they got shut down on downs. That was really frustrating when you're coming just a yard short and you have multiple run plays and you can't get it in. You know, that's where you say, okay, then we have to make some adjustments here. You know, I thought that compared to other games, I didn't think the play calling was necessarily bad overall. You just saw some situations where you say, you know what, do that naked boot like you mentioned here. Try this in there. It was all in the red zone where a lot of the problems were. They didn't have problems moving the ball throughout the game. They did that all right. And that even came early on when Justin Fields got off to a bad start. You know, early on, the line was holding up better than it normally did, but Fields was struggling. You had the sacks that he took that he should have thrown away. Those were on him. But as the game was going on, as Fields got better, they were moving the ball better. But, you know, the red zone, it's like nothing goes right in the red zone. The play calling is questionable. The execution isn't good. You're not catching the ball. You can move the ball fine. It's like everything was looking good. Play calling good. Play call good. Execution right. Up here comes the red zone. And it just really, really frustrating. I mean, again, the first quarter, it wasn't good in the first quarter all around. Then it kind of moved on. Things got better, except in the red zone.
You know, and the problem is with Justin Fields, is you've got to either protect him and give him time to make the throws and make the reads. And he's not going to see any young quarterback. They're not going to have, be able to do those reads as fast as a veteran quarterback. Just not going to happen. You're not going to have the mind of Tom Brady, in your second year, especially a second year in a brand new system.
Right.
And if you're not going to have good offensive line, you better have good weapons and receivers that are going to get clearly open, because Justin Fields, when he has time, he throws a good deep ball. It's his underneath stuff. His short passes have been questionable. And, I think the problem is he's not trusting his wide receivers and he's not trusting his arm on what is open in the NFL. And if you watch, you'll see a play where, a guy's covered, but, it's going to be a situation where when he makes his cut, there's no safety help. He should be able to get open and you're going to have to throw him open. And he's not hitting those. He's not even attempting those. And I don't know if that's a product of, he's not trusting his arm, if he's got a little bit of confidence issues, or if, he feels like the game's still a little fast. Or he's seeing some ghosts because of the poor offensive line protection. I don't know, but it's so hard to be able to properly judge him and grade him because he just isn't getting the support he needs. And no matter what happens, it's an unfair grade to him.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to develop in this sort of situation. And, I always try to look at it both sides because, as we've said over the weeks, there are definitely things that he needs to get better at. We know that. We saw the struggles early on in the game. I mentioned not getting rid of the ball. That was tough. And, there were some throws that just weren't made accurately. There were some struggles there. But, it's frustrating because in the second half and on that final drive in particular, Justin Fields he set up what should have been a game-winning drive. That run he had to get them into the red zone was incredible. It was absolutely an incredible play by Justin Fields. He is so good with his legs. It's a shame that it just had to go to waste. And the two balls that were not completed to Pettis and Mooney, he put those in perfect spots. And lo and behold, he was under pressure. And it was hard for him to do anything more because he did everything he could. And it's just that the plays weren't made. And yeah, you could probably call pass interference on Pettis, but regardless, it wasn't the easiest catch, but it was a catchable ball where, Mooney, that was one that just needed to be caught.
Yeah, absolutely. And having an elite wide receiver would help, because their catch radius is bigger. They get open better. There's so much more room for, imperfect throws that they make up for. And case in point, look at the difference between the Packers last year and the Packers this year. The run game for the Packers this year is significantly better than it was last year or on paper. And, but you take away Davante Adams and it changes the whole dynamic of their offense. And that's with a Hall of Fame quarterback. That's the type of things that happen. The Bears, if they had a guy like a Davante Adams, where it keeps that defense honest, they're not able to bring that safety down the eighth man in the box. They can't do that. Where they have to They have to have a safety deep. They have to protect the deep plays because, you know, the way Justin Fields throws a deep ball to, and the way Devontae Adams gets open and catches balls and also draws pass interference calls, you are totally going to take the top off of a team. And so that's the type of thing where, you know, it's Justin Fields is in a bad position because Darnell Mooney is able to get open, but they blanket him so hard because they know that they can cover anybody else on that team with single coverage. They don't need help. And Mooney has dropped more passes than he did all of last year in the first couple of games. And so it's just a tough situation. Defensively, I think the Bears did a good job. They got pressure on the quarterback. They stopped the run. You know, that the touchdown was a product of a muffed punt.
They got to move. I think they got to move Velus Jones off that role.
You know what? And they talked about, he was going to be the punt and kick returner. And going back, he didn't return that many punts in college.
Right.
He was mostly a kick returner. And punts and kicks are different animals.
They are.
Catching a punt is he clearly lost it. And the crazy part is when he missed it, he rolled on the ball. The guy took it away from him. That's the frustrating part is he fell on his own fumble and the guy just reached in there and yanked it away. So they basically had two games in a row where a guy ganked the ball from one of their guys and cost them a game.
It's really frustrating when you see things like that. And I know there's calls for Velus Jones Jr. to be cut. I'm like, no, you can still use him in the offense. I think that he's still a good tool that you can use going forward. I just don't want him in the punt return role anymore.
Yeah. You got to start utilizing him in the offense because every other receiver you have kind of stinks other than Mooney. Pettis is not good. The guy that they claimed off of waivers from the Vikings, he's terrible. They're going to have to start using Velus Jones. Really, they're just move him off the punts.
Is Byron Pringle going to come back anytime?
Did they move him to injured reserve?
I think they might have.
Then
I haven't heard much about him in a while. So
if they did, he's got to miss four games.
Yeah. I just think, I'm not saying Byron Pringle is going to be a savior, but at least that's a experienced veteran wide receiver who's played in a really good system before.
Yeah. They put Byron Pringle on IR on 9/27. So Pringle must miss a minimum of four games, which means he won't be eligible to play until the Cowboys game.
Oh, there you go.
So there you have it.
So we won't see that. So there's no way we see him in New England. I wonder if we're going to see N'Keal Harry. I mean, we've been kind of waiting on that all year.
Well, I mean, that would be a good opportunity.
I don't think it's going to make much of a difference.
What are you talking about? The N'Keal Harry revenge game.
Did you read the stat where they were saying how Halas and Bill Belichick are now tied in wins?
No.
All time. So if New England likely beats the Bears on Monday Night Football, that means he will pass George Halas. And dang it, if we could have beaten Washington, we'd still have that one game advantage on Packers in all time wins.
That's going to be a frustrating game. It's going to be a primetime game. And You know Belichick is going to be ready for that. Even with a rookie quarterback, that defense has been so stout.
Yeah.
The only saving grace is historically Bill Belichick defenses have struggled against running quarterbacks. That is the only saving grace the Bears have.
I feel like that's a stat where you just like Googled and like you got like those librarian glasses on and you're just trying to do this research and you're drinking cups of coffee and writing it down. Oh, look, I found this. There's hope.
No, but like they've struggled against, essentially they've struggled against running quarterbacks. They really have. That's the only saving grace. This defense has been really good and watching them shut teams down. I mean, they shut that was the Vikings down 2 weeks ago.
The Lions.
Yeah. Lions were scoring 400 points a game. And then they were just like, oh, this team that didn't score anything. Yeah.
Goose eggs.
So I think the Bears are going to be in for a rough night, and it's going to be embarrassing losing to somebody whose last name is Zappy.
Man, is it going to be like that 2014 game in New England?
I don't think it'll be that bad, but
I don't think so either, but
it's not going to be good.
No.
I'm looking up the line here.
I mean, obviously New England's going to be favored. There's absolutely zero question about that. It's just maybe my guess would be like 9 point underdog for the Bears.
Let's see. Why do they have to have a whole article about before they just put the odds? Here we go.
Need the clicky clicks.
7.5.
7.5. All right. I guess 9, but okay, 7.5.
I mean,
That's still a big difference. Yeah,
that's a big spread, and I don't like that spread.
No, I don't either. You know, a lot of people, and I've been saying this too, is you look at the rest of the Bears' schedule, and you're like, there's no real slam dunk wins here. And there's going to be that game where the Bears are not expected to win and they win. It happens every year. So I think they'll win one of those games. Maybe they'll beat the Lions once, and maybe week 18, the Vikings have the North all clinched and they're locked in and they rest their starters. I mean, those are really the three, like I really only see them winning 3 more games max. I mean, you never know, it's football, it's weird, but I mean, right now when you lose at home to the Commanders like that, and you look at the rest of your schedule, you don't feel necessarily great, especially when you have to play teams like the Eagles and the Bills, and you have one more against Green Bay, even though Green Bay sucks, but they always beat us, so it doesn't matter. You play the Dolphins. The schedule is not our, quote, easy stretch.
I am so, like, petrified of having to play against this Cowboys team, because that defensive front is so ridiculously good. And I'm just picturing Micah Parsons just destroying either of our offensive tackles.
I kind of fear that it's going to be like that Browns game last year.
Yes, it's going to be, unless they really game plan to do something different.
I got an idea. Justin Fields, just get a big old tub of lube. Just be nice so they can't grip you, tackle you. Just, I don't know, lube Crisco, whatever.
I thought you were going to say he just put a super soaker there. When guys blow past Braxton Jones and Larry Borum, he just squirts the lube on the ground and they slip and fall down.
Yeah, I mean, if you that might be a little difficult, you know, when you're trying to balance a football and a super soaker in your
hand. He's got that hand warmer, and he pulls out a banana peel and throws it on the ground.
Like Mario Kart. I mean, I don't know how else they're going to handle that. I mean, I feel like you could scheme it all you want, but that defensive front, They're elite. It's going to be men versus boys.
Yeah. But I mean, they're talking about, or yeah, I saw a quote from the flu saying that they were going to evaluate everybody that in this mini bye week. And honestly, what moves do you plan to make?
Yeah, I mean, like, you're probably not going to trade. You're not going to sign anybody that's notable. You call up guys from the practice squad. I mean, there's not much that could be done, is there?
I mean, you know, you're probably going to shuffle your, your kick returner, your punt returner. But you know, honestly, what else are you going to do on your offensive line? You know, other than if his thumb is fine and you can kick Lucas Patrick into center and move Alex Leatherwood into guard, and see how that goes. But Lucas Patrick has been brutal as guard.
Yeah. There's really, I mean, sure, you can move a few things around. You can try to scheme a little differently. There's just only so much you can do.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have a lot of depth. So I'm not sure what else there is to do. I mean, like, Dante Pettis hasn't been good. All right, if you bench him, you know, who do you put in? Because N'Keal Harry, they said they're going to work him back in over the weeks, slowly. But I mean, already playing. Amir Smith-Marset has been bad. Like, who else are you going to put in? Like, you're stuck at wide receiver, stuck at tight end. Offensive line, I guess you can do some, you know, slight shuffling. I mean, you know, you could put in Riley Reiff and see if that shores things up a little bit. Again, he's not great, but he's at least a veteran that's maybe stopped some of the bleeding. But your defense actually played pretty well. So I just don't know how much shuffling there is to do. And, you know, guys know it. Guys know, hey, like, we can't get benched. There's nobody to play above us.
Right. I mean, that's a big problem. It's a really big problem. And the other thing that's frustrating too is there's what, 11 games still?
Something like that. We're
not even halfway through the season.
Yeah. I mean, and the schedule is just going to start getting harder and harder. We went through the easy portion. You know, I hate to say it, but I think the national media was probably right about us.
They were right about us, and I initially agreed with them, and then I talked myself into not agreeing with them, and then I'm like, oh yeah, my first gut instinct was right. Now here's
I honestly thought the Bears we were going to see this year were what the Jets are, where they play good defense and they score just enough points, and they don't make a lot of mistakes. And you're like, okay, they're able to eke out some games and stay in games that they, even when they lose, that's really what I thought we were going to see, is, you know, the Bears were going to be what the Jets are, because I watched that Jets Packers game and they played good defense, mm-hmm. and they've got a young quarterback who made all the same mistakes as Justin Fields is making, all the same mistakes, but they've got better weapons and a better offensive line, and makes all the difference in the world.
Yes,
and
it does.
And they're still not scoring that many points. But it's the, all the difference in the world. And, you know, the Bears have had You know, they've played some good defense, but they've played some bad defense, and the offense just is nowhere near what it should be.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I'm absolutely with you there. It's just, it's too bad. I mean, listen, at this point, they're 2-4. I think at this point we predicted 3-3. So it's one game off of where most of us predicted. It's just the context of it all. You know, there's, you win, you lose, sure. But when you're in a transition phase like this, you want to be looking for certain things in a game, whether or not you win or lose. And once again, we were in a spot where we were looking for a lot of positives, especially in a game against a team like the Commanders. Like I said, I was really hoping he would just, the offense in Justin Fields would just be able to go out and score a ton of points at home, you know, give us something entertaining and fun to watch. And instead it was just pure frustration and anger and just it's sadness when they could not convert on fourth down at the end. I wasn't swearing, screaming, throwing things, punching things. I just, my head just kind of sunk, like from almost exhaustion. I was just sad. I was really, really sad that this is still where we're at. And we all darn well know that this is not a contending roster. It's not a contending team. They were never going to be a contending team. It just never was going to be part of this season, because you could scheme great. You can execute on the little things. But when you're void of elite talent like other teams, you know, that eventually is going to catch up to you. But, you know, we're seeing some of these struggles that are just really, really tough. But I also want to go another direction here really quickly, just really, really quickly. I want to add this. The Bears, as I've said, seem to struggle on offense more than anybody. More than anybody. With all that being said, I gotta admit, the more I watch some of these other NFC teams, I'm thinking, wow, there's a lot of crap out there. Like, we might be the crappiest of crap, but we're not the only crap.
Yeah, there's the football this year has been pretty bad. I mean, the Jets had a lot of times that they did not look any better than the Bears. I watched the Buffalo Kansas City game, and you know, the teams just struggled to move the ball. There's a lot of games, just bad football and bad offense. The issue is the other teams just, it's like garbage. All right, go down and score. And the Bears' problem is, and you know, honestly, the Bears could be in that same caliber and same echelon if they just converted those field goals into touchdowns. You know, you'd be like, okay, well, they suck most of the time like everybody else, but they're able to put up, you know, three touchdowns and a field goal, and they're scoring 24 points, and you're like, okay, you know, you convert, instead of four field goals, you know, two touchdowns, two field goals, three touchdowns, one field goal. That just makes the whole, you know, whole big difference in what they, you know, the outcome and the way you view things looks. And that's what the other teams are doing. They're getting those chunk plays. They're getting those explosive plays that the Bears just aren't getting. And I don't know. It's just really frustrating. And, you know, the only good thing about it is we're going to get a good draft pick out of it.
Yeah, and there's two things. There's two things that I think about a lot when I see where the Bears are right now. Number one, I've said this multiple times on Twitter. I'm going to say it again on this show. What makes these losses more frustrating, knowing you're in a rebuild year, knowing that you're not expected to go anywhere, it's the fact that you have the most important future asset on your team in Justin Fields when this is all happening. If we were in year one of a rebuild and we didn't have our future quarterback, or we didn't have him playing, and they just had like a Andy Dalton or Matt Barkley or just some veteran bridge, it would be very easy to kind of tune out a lot of the emotion and be like, all right, get through this season, get through this rebuild season. Let's get that draft pick. Let's use this draft capital. Let's move forward. Because you're watching this now and you're like, you watch because you want to see progression from Justin Fields because he's the most important asset on your team and the essential part of your future. So it's a bad team and a bad season, but there's still the importance of that. And his growth could be stunted by the fact that he is on a tanking, rebuilding roster. Whereas if they didn't have him in this situation and it was like 2016 when he won three games like Matt Barkley, nobody gave a shit about that season after like week three, week four. You know, Matt Barkley, Brian Hoyer, it's like, okay, clearly you're thinking long-term ahead. So you could just kind of tune it out easy. It's harder to tune it out and it's harder not to feel a bit more frustrated when this is all happening while you're trying to develop your quarterback.
Yeah. And it's Ryan Poles, Matt Eberflus are not dumb. They're not blind either. They know the situation that they're in and they know the importance of developing this young quarterback. And I'm just frustrated that there doesn't seem to be solutions to make it better.
At least in the short term, there's not.
Yes. Yes. Like long term, I think the Bears are going to be extraordinarily aggressive to make things better. But in the right now, it's just infuriating because they can't stop the bleeding. They've got to keep him upright, Justin Fields. They've got to keep him upright, and they've got to find a way to score points. And I understand Ryan Poles, his path to having long-term greatness with the Bears. But at some point, he's got to jumpstart that. It's all fine and good to say, we'll tear it down to the studs and we'll rebuild through the draft. But that takes a really long time. And when you're not winning ball games, the NFL stands for not for long.
No, it doesn't. And what I'm trying to be optimistic about is thinking about what's going to happen this offseason. You're going to have draft picks and you're going to have a ton of money to spend. I mean, that is why we're in this situation, is because you had to get rid of a lot of the crap from the Ryan Pace era. So you had to strip it down in order to get that draft capital and get the flexibility you're going to have financially going forward. It's just, it's too bad that in the middle of this is Justin Fields. And I'm not saying I wouldn't rather not have Justin Fields. Don't get me wrong with that. I'm just saying this would be easier to swallow in the moment if we were just rolling with some bridge, if that makes sense. I'm not saying I don't want Justin Fields or that I wish that, you know, we would draft somebody else and we'd forget this. That's not what I'm saying at all. It's the mindset of a fan. It's more frustrating to fail with the future on your team than it would be if you're like, okay, none of this is going to be important by next year.
Oh yeah. I completely understand. My worry is just that Ryan Poles is not going to want to spend a ton in free agency trying to make this team better. And because he's going to want to build through the draft. And what I'm saying is at some point he's going to have to jumpstart this rebuild by bringing in talent to build off of, because if you just build through the draft, it's going to take you years. And that's not viable in the NFL.
And there's going to come a time where you need to bring in veteran experienced guys to help you grow.
Right. You just got to be very smart and very selective about it. You know, if you were to sign and trade trade for a true number one receiver, like the Raiders did with Devontae Adams, and give him a big deal. Okay, fine. You lost the draft capital on that and you're spending a lot of money, but to get an elite talent like a Devontae Adams, You're like, okay, that is worth it because quickly, elite wide receiver is becoming the second most important position in the NFL. It's quarterback, clearly, and then it used to be edge rusher or left tackle. It's quickly becoming number one wide receiver. And until the Bears get one, and, you know, maybe with a high draft pick, they end up getting one. But, you know, if at some point you've got to do something to make things better. And I think the Bears can and should be really aggressive in free agents or in the trade market. And there's, I think, 2 weeks left before the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be questions about what they could do. You know, you're hearing rumors about the Panthers selling off pieces, and they have the one wide receiver that's on the market. And it's like, oh, you know, that makes sense for the Bears. And, you know, do they make a move like that just to maybe stabilize something?
The only problem is, where the Bears are drafting, like other teams are probably going to consider throwing around a number one pick. If you're the Bears, you cannot do that. You absolutely have to protect that number one pick with your life because it's going to be a high one.
Right.
Then it's, are you able to move a second rounder, saying, you know, selling a team that it's going to be essentially a late first rounder? I honestly, if I'm the Bears at this point, I consider moving Robert Quinn and consider moving Roquan Smith.
Well, you know what? I think you're at the point where you can build up more draft capital with some of these veterans that you have. I mean, there's not a whole lot, but obviously Roquan Smith and Robert Quinn were the two guys that were talked about in the offseason, Roquan Smith being part of your future, Robert Quinn being a possible trade asset. Now it's like, well, Robert Quinn isn't doing what he's doing last year, which isn't entirely surprising, and Roquan has struggled, so you kind of have to reevaluate what you're going to do with those guys. I mean, if Robert Quinn was doing what he was doing last year, like if he was getting sacks like crazy right now, I like after these first few weeks, I'd be begging for the Bears to try to flip him. Cause I like Robert Quinn, but he's not part of the long-term he's not in the long-term plans where Roquan is supposed to be, but you know, we haven't seen him play nearly as well since the holdout.
I think the pressures are still there, just not getting home. And, you know, if you put him as a complimentary piece on a good team, suddenly I think those probably turn into sacks.
Sure, but I agree.
But my only concern about trading him in the offseason was at some point, somebody's got to rush the passer and get pressure.
Right.
And at this point now we're like, okay, you know what? This team is bad. I would rather, if we're going to be bad anyway, I would rather have the trade value, whatever that is.
Exactly.
And I would rather give the playing time to Travis Gibson, Dominique Robinson, or guys that are going to be here next year. And
right.
If we're not going to be good and we're not going to get those pressures anyway, you know, I would rather just play. And same thing with Roquan Smith I once thought he was going to be a cornerstone of this defense. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he's playing to stay healthy or if he's, you know, he's still suffering the lingering effects of missing all of training camp or what's going on, but he's not the same guy. And I would part ways with him and get what you can because, you need to, you know, rebuild, you need draft picks to do that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, what you said was exactly spot on with my thoughts. Going into the season, I wanted somebody to rush the passer. But at this point, it's like, what the hell's the point? I mean, the defense, at this point of the season, like, I don't really care much about the defense outside of, like, Brisker and Gordon and Eddie Jackson. And, I mean, I'd like to see Roquan Smith play a bit better, but, you know, when it comes to some of the older guys, like Robert Quinn is one of the older guys, you know, that you don't really care as much this point going forward because he's not part of the long-term plans.
And you're right. There's no ill will towards Robert Quinn. I like Robert Quinn. I would like to see him get traded to a team that has a chance to win a Super Bowl. Sure. And in return, the Bears get some sort of draft compensation that they can help to rebuild and get rid of some of that cap space and allow them to be even more aggressive.
And you know what? You can say that a lot of those guys are only worth like lower round picks, but you know what? If you stuck on lower round picks, you always do have the ability. If you have a lot, maybe you use them to trade up at some point. Yeah. You know, it's never bad to have a ton of picks.
Yeah.
No matter how high or small.
You know, if you're the Bears and you couple a late third rounder with your very early second rounder, you know, you could probably move into the first round again.
Sure, exactly. And, you know, if you are in the fourth or fifth and you got a ton of those, maybe you move up to get to the third. There's somebody you want. So, you know, the more picks you have, the better.
It gives you the flexibility to do things.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And I also think, too, that if you look at what Ryan Poles did last year, where he traded back a million times to stock up on picks, you could say, you know what? He did that because he needed draft capital. Ryan Pace left him with very little draft capital. That was to get more draft capital. Now, if you build more of that, then you can do several other different things. So he already has good draft capital going into next year. So he's not going to have to make all those trade backs again. So now there's just more options, more available. And you'd like to have that, you know, brought even further, the more picks you get. And I mean, I don't really know what other guys you would be looking to trade off this roster. You just don't have very much. I mean, Robert Quinn and Roquan Smith are like two of the really notable ones, but I mean, you're not going to trade David Montgomery. I mean, no one's going to really give you anything for him. And unless somebody goes down and someone's in desperate need, I don't see there being a big hunt for a running back. You're not going to trade any of your receivers because they're not really going to be worth trading. I mean, and you're not going to trade Brisker or Gordon because they're rookies, and you're not going to trade Dominic Robinson. He's a rookie. And I don't see them trading Eddie Jackson, even though he is a little older. But so, you know, there's not a lot that you can do, but if you could get something, just somehow, even if it's lower round picks, like it would just be ideal to get some picks at this point.
And I mean, and the salary cap relief of parting ways with Robert Quinn would be not necessary, but nice. If you end up trading him, you wind up next year with $125 million in cap space.
Yeah, it's pretty good. That is pretty good.
Yeah, that gives you plenty of money to extend Darnell Mooney, which apparently the Bears are very eager to do.
Yeah, you're hearing those extension rumors now, and I mean, I feel like Darnell Mooney, you could extend without doing anything crazy. You know, he's not going to, you're not looking at Devontae Adams money. You're not looking at Cooper Kupp money. You're not looking at that kind of thing. So you could definitely do something reasonable.
Right. You know, but some of the pros of this game, not pros, but I guess some bright spots, Jaquan Brisker looked great.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting to see, other than that Giants game, if you take that out, that's the outlier. You are seeing significant growth from him, and it was already a nice start. And I'm going to be honest with you that Kyler Gordon is looking better and better every week. And
he is. Yeah. Yes, he is.
And some people are still going to always look at him as the guy that got burned a lot early on. It's happening less and less. Sure, we saw the pass interference on him. I thought that was ticky tacky, but we're seeing growth from him, and you're seeing him be able to transition from outside to inside regularly in between plays, which is good. I like the growth of him, and that's going to go a long way into helping this rebuild, is getting some of the first Ryan Poles draft class up to where they need to be.
Right, exactly. I think that Kyler Gordon is a guy that will be a positive story as we go along. I still like his skill set. I still like what he can do. Yeah, the first few games are ugly, but I still like him, and I think he's going to keep building on that. I do think he's going to be a good player. So you just try to take that, take away from that. The other thing I will say, too, I got to give him credit. Kendall Vildor has played decently.
Yeah, he is actually. So has Jalen Jones. Both of them pretty solid. Kendall Vildor, I thought, was arguably one of the worst corners I've ever seen. He's made significant strides. Mm-hmm. Does he look great? No, but if once we have consistent health of Jalen Johnson and we see the growth of Kyler Gordon, then having Kendall Vildor play as that third cornerback instead of the first cornerback, that's going to make him even better, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I really enjoy watching Jaquan Brisker play, and I really like that we're seeing the positives from Kyler Gordon recently. I mean, the secondary, there's things I feel a lot better about with the secondary, and you can see what a difference Jalen Johnson makes being on the field.
Yeah, absolutely.
The big thing is you just need to build depth behind those guys.
Right. But, the fact that you were seeing like marked improvement by Kyler Gordon means that the defensive backfield is becoming less of a priority. I mean, it's always, you always want to continue building depth, but when you're building from the ground up, you've got to find some anchors in position sets, and you hope you have your quarterback set. You think you have your two corners. You've got safeties locked up. You're like, okay, so now we just need to build depth, which are either, lower end free agents or later round picks or whatever the case is. You can start using your early draft picks as to fill other needs and fill gaps in that are much bigger gaps. So like those early round picks can be used for premium positions where you have needs, offensive line, wide receiver, edge rusher, etc.
Yeah, no, I agree. I definitely agree. I mean, there are so many needs on this team, let's be real, but at least you could look at one area and feel pretty good because, man, Eddie Jackson has looked like his old self, and you really love Jaquan Brisker. I mean, the secondary, like I said, it needs depth, but you can build depth a lot easier than having to rebuild an entire core, and you got to basically rebuild the wide receiver core. You have a lot to do on the offensive line and the defensive line. So at least you can identify an area on your team where you're like, all right, we got a pretty good solid foundation here.
And I know a lot of Bears fans just like to beat up on Kyler Gordon because they've seen some rough plays early on and they somehow equate, well, we shouldn't have drafted him. We should have drafted George Pickens, the wide receiver out of Georgia. The issue is with George Pickens was never talent. It was off-field concerns. And, you know, was it a player that was going to, that you were going to get buy-in from, or is he going to be somebody that goes off the rails, which is still yet to be seen? We don't know. We've seen flashes of talent by him, but we've also seen flashes of talent at Kyler Gordon, but those, it shouldn't be one or the other. We had gaping needs at both positions. The Bears sort of felt that having Byron Pringle and Darnell Mooney would be able to buy them more time than it did. And we desperately needed another cornerback. And so I don't understand how those two have become, you know, it's not a Mitch Trubisky, Patrick Mahomes situation. This is a situation where I think Kyler Gordon's going to be pretty good and George Pickens might be pretty good too. It was just where the Bears felt that they were getting better value.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of one of those things I just don't try to think too much about. I don't try to harp on, we could have drafted this guy, we could have drafted that guy. It's easy to, but at the end of the day, you're always going to have that guy that you could have drafted that you didn't. And you hope that you're not going to be playing that game much down the road because Ryan Poles is drafting the right guys and we're building a winning team. Right now, it's just much easier to do that.
You know, it's one thing if you're the Packers in a Super Bowl window and you waste a first round draft pick drafting a quarterback when you could have drafted a wide receiver to help you at that moment. Like that's a situation where you're like, what the hell? We had a gaping need for a starting cornerback and a gaping need for wide receiver. And the value was better. They felt that he was a first round value cornerback and George Pickens was a second round wide receiver. It's just where they fell on the draft board. And, you know, I don't think having George Pickens would have made this team infinitely better or anything like that, because he's still a rookie wide receiver. You know, he had 27 yards receiving today. He's not like a Jamar Chase. He's not a Devontae Adams at this point. So it's not like he's a game changer.
Right.
We would probably be talking about how he sucked if he was on the Bears right now.
Oh, totally. Totally.
There's just a lot of room for improvement and it's going to be multiple draft classes before we see that things start to turn around. But I'm not looking forward to the Monday night game at all.
I'm not looking forward to most remaining games on the schedule. But yeah, that Monday game, that could just get outclassed.
Yeah, having a quarterback that's seeing ghosts with a bad offensive line against Bill Belichick, it's going to be a field day. I hope that the game plan is run Justin Fields to the left, run Justin Fields to the right, and you know, say six Hail Marys and see how it goes.
You know, I don't think we've beaten Bill Belichick since the early 2000s, and I think that was still when they had Bledsoe as quarterback. They never beat Belichick with Tom Brady. So, I don't know.
Yeah, so it is.
We'll see what happens against Zeppe.
The Zapster. At least when we get the Dolphins, Tua's still going to be out, and they might have fans playing quarterback at that point.
Oh, we'll still find a way. Don't worry.
The Bears will find a way.
Bears find a way.
So hockey season started.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Hey, they won. They won Saturday night.
Do you want to hear something crazy? So the Blackhawks aren't good. We can agree on that, correct?
Right, right. They built a team knowing they're not going to be good.
And I know it's extraordinarily early in the season. But right now, the Blackhawks have 8 teams with a worse record than they do. 8.
Yeah, cool. We're 3 games in.
How is San Jose that bad? They're bombing for Bedard better than we're bombing for Bedard.
Yeah, I'm actually starting to get a little worried about them in the Bedard chase. I mean it's least, a lottery, I know,
it is a lottery. But yeah, they're doing a real good job of bombing for Bedard.
They gave up 5 goals to the Hawks on Saturday. I think Lafferty scored 2 of them.
Lafferty scored 2, I think 2 shorties.
He did. Yep.
And, but man, I was like, oh man, we're going to lose to San Jose. That is good for us.
Like, 5 unanswered goals.
And yeah. And it's good and bad. Like, sure, I like seeing the Blackhawks win, and it's fun when they score 5 goals. And it might be the only time this season when they score 5 goals and Patrick Kane has 0 points.
Yeah. I will say, though, Taze has played fairly well the first few games.
Which is good, because then maybe we can trade him.
Yeah, I know, right? That's kind of where I'm looking at. It's like, hey, trade value, anybody? I mean, right now, what I would love is anyone who's not bolted down for the next few years, just trade them by midseason. Just let Davidson stack the hell up on picks. You can never have enough picks.
Yeah, but we had Jason Dickinson comes in and looks really good. I'm just saying, he looked good.
Oh, he has. I won't take that away from him. And I'm praying that somehow Max Domi finds the Fountain of Youth and we can trade him. And maybe Athanasiou can repeat what he did that one year where he scored like 30 goals, which was several years ago. I can dream, right?
The Blackhawks are going to nail or trade anything that's not nailed down that they can trade. That's because they're going to go all out for Bedard. That's true, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a pure tank year. And you know what? The nice thing is even if they don't get Bedard, it's a good draft class and they're going to have a good draft pick. With the way this is shaping, it should be a good draft pick for them. So you're going to be able to at least get some notable talent early on. It's just, oh, you want Connor Bedard so bad.
Yeah, you do. Every time we talk about Connor Bedard, you're like, well, it's going to be a good draft class. And I feel like you're just setting all of us up for to feel good even when we don't get Bedard.
Right, because they're going to get the second pick.
They're going to get not Connor Bedard. who did you get in the draft? Not Connor Bedard. Oh, okay.
Well, the scouting report on this guy is, yeah, but it's not Connor Bedard.
Yeah, but it's not. It's just not him.
Yeah, I want him so bad, but, it's going to be a blah year. I don't think that outside of a few teams or any teams that are significantly worse than the Hawks. I mean, San Jose is going to challenge them. Phoenix or Arizona. I still call them Phoenix. Arizona is going to be bad. Philly is going to be bad. But hey, you know what? The good thing for the Hawks for their tank is they play in a division that's ideal for tanking, where everybody else is at least competitive pretty much. I mean, you have the defending champs. You have the St. Louis Blues. You have the Wild. All three of those teams are set up to be prime cup contenders. So if they beat the hell out of you, okay, get you closer to the chances of getting Connor Bedard.
Yeah, because the way the odds are, it's not like the NBA where, you know, the first, what, three or the worst three teams have the same odds.
Mm-hmm.
The NHL, it's that the team with the worst record has almost a 20% chance of getting that top pick. And then the second worst team has a 13% chance. It's, you know, it's a significant drop in your chances of getting that top pick.
I'm simulating lottery after lottery after lottery after lottery after lottery. Oh, yes! Seventh time's a charm. Seventh time, the Blackhawks just won the lottery on tankathon.com. Seven times. It took me seven times, but we finally got it. The number one overall pick.
I'm on 14, and I still haven't got it. 15. 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 22 times. I've got number two pick like seven times, but it took me 22 times before we got the number one pick.
Well, it's early.
It is early. I mean, the teams that are worse than them, San Jose is bad, but and Arizona is bad. Minnesota and Ottawa have to come. Minnesota is definitely going to be much better. They'll separate themselves.
They should.
If not, they'll make themselves separate.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I think the other thing too, is that if you look at how this season is going to progress, I think that there is a good chance that other teams are going to get hot streaks and cold streaks at inopportune times. You just kind of hope that it benefits the Hawks. You know, even some of the worst teams have a little bit of a hot streak, and it's kind of all depends on who it happens against and where, because who somebody beats, it all makes a difference in the standings and all makes a difference with the lottery odds. So there's going to be a lot of changes in the odds, I think.
How funny would it be if the Blackhawks got the number one overall pick, but it was via the Tampa's number one pick?
Oh my goodness. That would be crazy.
Like, just saying, is if they got picks one and two.
Oh my God. If they got picks one and two, I would literally throw a party in the street.
You would see me in full meatball status. I would be out on my front lawn with my Marty Havlat crock pot with the biggest Homer meatballs ever. I'd have, like, that sauce would be so hot and spicy that I would have boils on me from burns.
You just hear it sizzle on your skin. Oh, it hurts so good.
Yeah, like, Sean, isn't that burning you? No, we got Connor Bedard and the number two pick.
What do you say, Marty Havlat?
I'm just picturing, have you seen the like or read about the new Brendan Fraser movie where he plays like a morbidly obese man.
Yes.
All I could picture is that's what like Marty Havlat looks not like now, and he's sitting there doing endorsements for the Marty Havlat crock pot. He's like, coming out of my crock pot.
Oh man, I wonder what old Marty Havlat is up to these days.
I have no idea. Nuns.
Oh, Marty Havlat. He was good, and then it's like he was kind of like the Starlin Castro of the Blackhawks, where he was here for a few years, then they finally got good. Yeah, we need to trade you, not because you're bad, because we need to make room for a better player in Marian Hossa. And the Cubs did that with Casho, a better version, which was Ben Zobrist. So, yeah, kind of just one of those guys like, hey, you're good, but sorry.
But, yeah, the Blackhawks... I don't know. They're not good, but they're not as bad as I thought they were going to be playing. I mean, based on the roster and based on what they look like in preseason, I was like, oh man, this is going to be real rough. They've been better than that so far in the first couple of games. I mean, the Avalanche game was rough, but the Avalanche are really good. Golden Knights are good too, and that was a hard fought game. You know, the second half of that game last night, they looked pretty good. I think we're going to see signs of life from this team, even though they're bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Luke Richardson is the right type of coach to have here with a bunch of young guys. He's despite what the roster looks like, he's not going to accept slacking off or not putting in 100% effort. I think you're going to see better efforts under Luke Richardson than you did Jeremy Colleton.
Old Jeremy Colleton.
Who I think is the Canucks AHL coach now, I think.
I think that's a right spot for him.
I think it is too. Yes.
But, you know, I think he was just in over his head in the NHL.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he was Brett Seabrook's age.
Yeah, they were in the same draft.
They were.
We could talk a little baseball here.
All right.
You know, we seemingly are starting to hear some names bandied about for the White Sox managerial spot. And I think the fan favorite is Ron Washington.
The fan favorite or the betting favorite?
I think that's the, from what I'm seeing online, that's the guy that the fans seem to be wanting.
I've been seeing Joe Espada, but I mean, I think Ron Washington would be a decent pick if you're looking at someone to help with the defense, because he's a defensive minded guy. I know that sounds football-y, but and the Sox need defense coaching badly. So I could see why there is an appeal there.
Yeah. I don't think, you know, it's a sharp contrast in what you had with Tony La Russa. Anything that's a sharp contrast is going to be a welcome change.
Oh yeah. I mean, honestly, people are really looking for not Tony La Russa, but you know, they also have some more guidelines in mind. They don't want it to be centered around somebody just because they have ties to the White Sox organization in the past. You know, they want someone experienced, but not necessarily ancient. And, you know, Joe Espada might not have the experience as a manager, but he's a really, really good coach, and he comes from a really, really good place in the Houston Astros. I think that there is an understanding that among the candidates, there are the ones that just don't make sense. Like Joe Madden's name has come up. I don't think that really fits what the Sox are trying to do. The personality, the way he uses his methods, I don't think it fits well for the Sox. I know people are really are like, please don't just hire AJ. Please don't. It doesn't sound like that's going to be the case.
Yeah. I mean, I think at this point, AJ Pierzynski or Ozzie Guillen are probably very, very long odds.
Right.
But with Jerry, anything is possible.
True.
I mean, Tony La Russa was probably really, really, really long odds in fans' minds.
I mean, they were zero pretty much until it happened.
But I think both of those names are out. I feel like they're going to get a real manager who's really going to do something for this team. And I don't think between Washington or Espada you're going to have a bad option. I think both will do a good job. They're both not ancient, out of touch guys. They're both currently working.
Mm-hmm.
So if those are truly the leading candidates right now, I would be okay with either one.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to touch. And this is not anything against Ozzie Guillen, but you know, Ozzie Guillen had a time and a place. And that time and place is not right now.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I agree.
It's one thing if Ozzie was a bench coach somewhere, you know, he took some time off and he wanted to get back into it. And he was a bench coach somewhere or was coaching, you know, a AAA team or something. He's been on TV and the radio just yammering away about what everyone else is doing wrong.
Yeah, exactly. He's been out of practice for pretty much as long as Tony La Russa was when he came back.
So it's that would be a terrible choice. And I'm not, you know, does AJ Pierzynski know baseball? Yes, absolutely he does. Will he be a good manager? Who knows? But there's no experience there.
Right. You're trying to salvage what is a World Series contending window, and you can't really afford to do that kind of thing.
I mean, you know, people will be like, well, the Cubs did it with David Ross, but, you know,
they were kind of grooming him for that position.
Yes. And it's a much different place that they put him in. They put him in a rebuild, and they're giving him that time to grow into the role and evaluate him.
Cubs didn't have to lose what the Sox have to lose in the middle of their window.
Right. And you know what? If by the time the Cubs are good, if they don't feel David Ross is that man, they'll make a change.
They did with Joe Maddon when they fired Rick Renteria.
Yep. So it's a much different situation. If after this window closes for the White Sox and they start a rebuild process again, if they wanted to hire AJ Pierzynski to be their manager, I would say, okay. I mean, it's still weird because he's so far removed from the game. I mean, you know, if that's really something you would want to do, you would probably want to bring him in as a bench coach or something to at least get him back in the clubhouse. I don't know. I think it would be a terrible time right now to try to make that move. And I think the only reason people are even mentioning it is because with this organization, any sort of tie can lead you to a managerial job.
Right. Exactly.
But on the other side of town, I'm starting to hear rumors that the Cubs could be interested in signing Jose Abreu.
Yeah. I wrote about it after Bruce Levine said it on Inside the Clubhouse on Saturday morning that Jose Abreu is high on the list for the Cubs. And some people question the fit. I think I like the fit. Yeah. He's an older guy, but you know what? He can still hit. And if you look at what they have at first base right now, you know, it's kind of open. The thought is having Matt Mervis be the guy. But you know what? If you bring in Jose Abreu, you can rotate Jose Abreu and Matt Mervis as a DH. And if you have a veteran guy for the next few years, it kind of takes some of the pressure off Matt Mervis, because Matt Mervis has been an absolute masher in the minor leagues, but he doesn't have any MLB experience yet. And, you know, you don't know. So kind of having that safety cushion, I think, is a good thing. And if you're able to get him on a 2-year deal with like a 3rd-year option, I think you can easily go that route. Jed Hoyer, I think, is very interested in signing guys to a few years, but a higher AAV. So you don't have that long-term commitment. So the hope is that you can sustain success by not only having a good farm system, but being able to sign guys in different phases. And the first phase of what will hopefully be a contending window for the Cubs, Jose Abreu could be a part of that first phase.
Yeah. I mean, is he on the back nine of his career? Absolutely. But he still was one of the leaders in Major League Baseball in hits this year. He could definitely be an asset for this organization right now, especially with the gaping need they have at first base. And like you said, we've talked about the potential for Matt Mervis stepping in, but if we know anything about young players, is they're going to hit some sort of wall, whether that's the extended season that they've never played that long, or if it's they go into an extended slump because of, you know, the difference in talent that they are seeing pitch in and pitch out. It's nice to be able to have a professional hitter that could step in and take the pressure off, or to, you know, if you need to send that player back, the young player back down to the minors, you have that stopgap there. I think it's a good fit. We've talked about who could be available at first base or what the Cubs could do at first base. And I think we've so zoned in on signing one of the elite shortstops, people forget that first base has been a extreme position of need for this season.
And, you know, I think there might be something to say too about, you know, Jose Abreu was the face of the White Sox for almost a decade. He was the main center of that team for many years. I mean, he was there in the Robin Ventura days and the rebuild days and then the window days. So, you know, he's been there for so long. He's been that face, the primary guy. He comes to the Cubs, he doesn't really have the pressure of being the face of the franchise. You know, he's just a piece on the team, not devaluing him, or he'd be very valuable as a great teammate and a great leader. But I just don't think there's that pressure for him to be the guy, the face of the team.
Especially if the Cubs were to make a huge move and sign one of the top shortstop free agents, that's clearly going to be the person that everyone's going to look towards. It's, you know, Jose Abreu would be the guy that can fly under the radar and just coast out the last few years of his career.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it's one of those situations, in my opinion, where if you get a guy like him and he's performing at just a consistent pace, it might not be in prime pace, but consistent, that can help your ball club go a long way. And I mentioned the veteran leadership. I think he'd be great for the clubhouse. I think he'd be good for the team. So, I mean, I'm all for it. I'm absolutely all for it.
And honestly, you probably have the inside track if the White Sox truly are moving on from him, because he could live wherever he's living. He's not worried about having to move, because he could stay in Chicago. And, you know, for a player that is at the last, you know, the twilight of his career, do you want to uproot your family and your life and move somewhere else? Like, it's very clear that he's a guy that likes to have that consistency, and that's why he stayed with the organization that you know, he started with. So staying in the same city at least is probably a leg up.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's two ways you can look at it. If you want to stay in the city, obviously the Cubs would be an option. The other option would be, you know what? I want to look for a contender that could use my services, because I'm sure Bray would want to win before he goes out. So, you know, the Cubs won't be the only team on him, but I think there's definitely reasons to say, yeah, I think Jose Abreu could fit in here and that he'd want to come here. Like Bruce Levine said, I don't think there's a reason for him to say no. It'll just be who offers what and what situation looks best for him personally. But I think that there is something to be said about him being able to stay in the city he's familiar with. I'm not saying it's going to be the main selling point, but there could be something to it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm not saying that, you know, that's it. You know, he stays in the same city but
print that jerseys now,
you know, like we've talked about before, is these players are all human beings and they all have different things they're looking for, and where they live is a factor in things, you know. Like I was reading that when Jacob DeGrom hits free agency, that he's going to give priority to being closer to Florida, where he's from. So, like, you know, everybody's got, there's probably people that are like, you know what, screw that. I make a lot of money and I'm, you know, my 20s or 30s. I want to be somewhere where the nightlife is great and the restaurants are great and there's always something to do. And I want to be in LA or Chicago or New York. I don't want to be in Tampa or Milwaukee. That's, you know, there's a lot of people that are like that. There's people that are just like, you know, hey, I don't want to uproot my family. I would like to stay close. So if I can't be with the White Sox, then the Cubs or the Brewers or, you know, would be ideal, because I could leave them in place and I'm still close. But you know, every player is different, and I don't know enough about Jose Abreu as a person to say, but I'm just saying, is based on what I've seen, is loyalty to that organization and wanting to have that continuity. I would think that being in Chicago would be a good selling point, and not the sole selling point, but at least a good selling point. And if the money is right and the Cubs can do a presentation to him like, hey, this is how we finish the season without all of these named players, when we're going out to sign players and bring up some of our young players, we really think we could be contenders. That, you know, that all those coupled together could be what puts him over the edge and bringing him into Chicago.
Yeah, for sure. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah. And I think, you know, is he going to be cheap? No, but he's also not going to be expensive either. And it's one of those, if he's your, you know, number one free agent signing, then you didn't do enough. But as a complimentary piece, if you were to bring in Trey Turner and a frontline pitcher or whatever, and
Carlos Correa, who's opting out.
Yeah. If you bring in Carlos Correa and Jacob DeGrom and Jose Abreu, then you go, all right, we really are making moves here.
Yeah, exactly. And we've heard from Jed Hoyer. He's made his statements public. He's given the end of the year presser. We've read the stuff from Tom Ricketts. Everything is pointing to them having a big offseason. And I'm saying, okay, you're promising a big offseason. You're saying you're going to be aggressive. You're going to spend money. You know, okay, I believe you. I know people might think I'm a fool for believing them, but I genuinely do. I think they are legitimately in a spot where they can do that and they will do that. It's just now we're like, all right, now you got to back up your words. You got to do it. And then we will further judge on how it all comes together. So I like the tone from what I'm hearing from Jed Hoyer in the front office and ownership. I think that they're ready to get back into contention. I mean, they're literally going to try to get back in contention next year. They're not talking about multi-years of trying to build up. They're ready to get back in this, and they need to be ready to get back in this. So now is going to be the time to see what they do.
I'm going to throw a name out there. And this is probably a high risk, high reward name / player. Justin Verlander.
I've heard multiple people say this. I think you could potentially get him on a very short-term deal. I don't think anybody out there is going to go after Justin Verlander for a ton of years at his age. I would not hate it.
He's probably going to opt out of his contract the last year of his deal, right?
I mean, after likely winning Cy Young, I'm sure he would like to try to get some more money. I think it's very possible.
And you probably, if you're the Cubs, sign him to, I mean, he's going to be what, 40 this year?
Yeah, he's up there.
Yeah, I think he's going to be 40 this year. But if you were to sign him for like a 2-year deal with an option for a third year, and you do that, like Jed has been saying, the high AAV, doesn't kill you if you're the Cubs. I just wonder if he's willing to do that, because he probably wants to win a World Series.
Right. And Houston's going to be one of the best chances to do that.
It just, you know, are they going to pony up the money for a new contract?
Right. And that's why I like the idea. I think it's intriguing. I thought about it. I'm not sure it's likely, but it is a very interesting idea, and I'm kind of glad you brought it up.
Yeah, I would say that is probably a very low likely outcome. I'm just saying is, if you're going to be aggressive, that is probably the most aggressive move that you can make.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that's going to require, even if it's a short amount of time, a lot of money. And it is a risk considering the miles and the age of him, even though he is coming off an insanely good season.
Yeah, I mean, with him being your ace, that could really settle in the rest of your starting rotation.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would not be against that, but that would be the aggressive move, I think. I mean, you know, signing Carlos Correa or Trey Turner or somebody is going to be aggressive, but it's the expected safe aggressive move.
You're signing guys in their prime in those cases.
Yeah, but it's the one everybody expects you to make. If you do it and you fail, you go, well, I mean, everybody just goes, well, that's what we expected them to do. And it just, the player didn't do what they were supposed to do. But I think they're safe, aggressive moves. But Verlander, I think, would just be the super aggressive. We're going for it. This is, you know, it's where playoffs are bust right here.
Right.
Oh man, the Eagles are really stomping the Cowboys.
Yes, they are. They are the clear front runners right now to win the NFC. It's kind of not even close at this point.
Did you watch the Packers Jets game today?
I saw a bit of it, and yeah, pretty impressive work by the Jets. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. So far, Green Bay hasn't looked all that spectacular.
Why is it that they look so good against the Bears and they look so pedestrian against everybody else?
I mean, the Bears did just lose to the Commanders.
True, but like,
it's so frustrating as hell. Don't get me wrong.
Every year, they play a perfect game. Like, nothing goes wrong. Right. All the calls go their way. Like any 50-50 play goes their way. They mm-hmm. don't make mistakes. And you watch them against other teams and guys drop balls and guys run the wrong route.
They fumble. They can't block. Yeah, they can't kick.
It's like playing the Bears is their Super Bowl. Because clearly they don't go to the Super Bowl in real life. Ooh, burn. But man, Aaron Rodgers has got to be so frustrated. He gets hurt on the last play of the last game. He's clearly in pain. His wide receivers are terrible. And he was getting hit left and right in this game.
Yeah, he was. I mean, they were all over him. That offensive line was getting blown up.
Dear Aaron, I think it might be time for you to retire and go realign your chakras.
Yeah, I think so too.
That would be amazing because that team without Davante Adams is not that good. But that team without Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams is, you know, they always talk about how their head coach has like such a high winning percentage to start his career. And he's like tops in NFL history. And that is going to come down wicked fast if Aaron Rodgers retires.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to need a new quarterback. That's for sure. And they have a lot wrapped up in the money. So
mm-hmm.
the day is going to come where they have to pay the piper. And Sean Hotman is going to show up at Lambeau Field in his leprechaun uniform and his flute.
I'm going to be in a leprechaun outfit, but on stilts with with my flute. Time to pay the piper, Packers.
People are looking around like, what the hell is that? And then they finally look up on the stilts and they see you all the way up there with your flute.
Oh,
you try to walk onto Lambeau Field and like the stilt gets caught in the grass and it starts to sink and you get stuck up there.
The funny part is it's going to be, you know, they're like, Sean, what are your two greatest days in your NFL, like in your life as an NFL fan? And I'll be like, well, obviously number one was when the Bears won in the 85 Super Bowl season. And number two is when the Packers had to pay the piper.
And buddy, I was literally the piper.
I've got flute lessons all ready for this day.
Literally just taking flu classes for that sole purpose.
I want to take like those Revolutionary War, like paintings of, you know, with the flautist walking around in the battlefield and Photoshop my face on it and with a Bears jersey on and make the background Lambeau Field.
Yeah.
There's people fighting all over the place and there's Lambeau Field and me in a Bears jersey with a flute. And the greatest day ever was this day in Green Bay.
There's gonna be like a storybook made about it, and oh, it's gonna be glorious. The stilted leprechaun.
The Chicago stilted leprechaun.
Oh my god, that's gonna be the next kid's book. Oh my god. And you're gonna draw it in that old like German cartoon, like 100-year-old fashion, where like the lips are like the cheeks are all like rosy with the like big eyes and no, you know that style of old German art. It's just gonna be you as a leprechaun on a freaking stilt.
It'll be me in a children's book. I'll be also an obvious t-shirt and the whole kit and caboodle.
The Chicago stilted leprechaun versus Strul Peter.
I'll be the Bears version of Ronnie Woo Woo.
Oh dear God.
Bears. Doodly 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 Bears. Doodly doodly.
You're going around Soldier Field, and everyone is like, "Who the hell is this Joker?"
I've just got an old Bears jersey on, and I've got like a, you know, a Carhartt snowsuit on, and I'm just playing my flute with the big thick wool gloves with no fingertips on them.
George McCaskey, Eric, can you teach me how to do that?
I didn't learn this in the ticket office.
It ends up being you, George, just going around the concourse. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, your concession stands ran out of food by halftime. Oh, that's too bad. I'm sorry. I'll see what I can do. Oh, I tried to drum up some Skittles, but it didn't work.
Oh, just, I wish I could draw a picture of George McCaskey trying to play the flute.
Maybe that'll be a challenge for me.
Yes, we need to see a painting of that.
An elegant painting.
And please, there has to be a video of you doing it, but you dressed as Bob Ross. I made a pee-pee stain. I accidentally got yellow on the front of George's pants. That's a happy little mistake.
You see, there are no mistakes. It's a happy little accident. We're just going to put this nice, nice little RC Cola next to him. There we go. And the concession stands will be nice and empty, and it's only going to be halftime as he's on his tiny, tiny little stilts with his flute. No joke, though. My brother was at the game, and he said they were out of, like, most of their shit by halftime. Like, how the hell does that happen?
I don't know. It is. Everything with this team is just unreal.
It's like something out of a cartoon.
I'm seeing now that that there are starting to become chinks in the armor of the Arlington Heights plan. Because people are starting to question who's paying for the infrastructure for the stadium to be built there, and all these shops and other things that they're planning, the existing businesses in downtown Arlington Heights are like, how is this going to impact us financially? And, you know, there's just, it's like everything the McCaskeys touch, it's like the opposite of the Midas touch. It's everything they touch turns into dog turds.
It just turns into like sludge. They go around just, oh, look, here's the Walter Payton statue. Sludge.
It's like, it's George McCaskey. Why is there all kinds of water in your house? And why does it stink? Well, I went on the roof to try to repair it, and you know how it goes. I had a poop roof.
Well, thank you for now letting me know so I know never to come back.
It's like a fist bump after that. No, George, I will not be fist bumping you.
Yeah, sorry. I'm going to decline that.
I know where your hands have been and what they do.
Oh, man. George McCaskey's going to go to the Arlington Heights site with his flute and try to drum up the stadium magically.
He's like, let me see if I can magically make the city hall votes come in.
Oh, it's money that you need for funding for the stadium.
He's like, I need some TIF funds. He's like, concrete costs how much to pour?
They're building the stadium. Hey, yo, boss, the crane broke. Oh, hold on. Did that help? No. In fact, the crane just collapsed.
And all of my workers got annoyed at you and left.
They're all on strike.
They're like, oh, we built this, all the shopping districts, and there's no stores there. How are we going to get companies to come rent this facility out? Oh, do, 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 do. He's writing down in his diary. He's like, if you flute it, it will come.
Oh, he's going to be telling the coaches, if you need to draw up a play, just do this. Intercepted. Oh, I guess I didn't play it right.
Oh, we need a better offense.
Oh no, they're lining up to block. They're lining up to kick the game winning field goal, the other team. Oh, don't worry, we'll distract them.
And he's wearing old timey shoes with a buckle on them. And knickers.
And the knickers have holes in them.
They've got a big hole in the crotch where his thigh rub. And he's wearing tights underneath that they're Bears orange. With his buckle shoes.
He walks around, buckle just kind of clanks around. I think I might need to Photoshop this.
Oh my god. Like, George, what are you wearing?
Wow, he's really lost his mind.
Oh my god.
They don't play bear down anymore when they score, when they win. He just takes the microphone.
Every single game, the halftime show is
it's the same song, and George McCaskey in the same spot every time. Center field, and he's like hopping around like the logo, and everyone is just like sitting there like, oh my god, we've seen this 10 times already.
Yeah, the season ticket holders are just Buffalo Bills fan throwing up. And he's like, now for the halftime show, it is Bears chairman and CEO George McCaskey playing his flute. And then as soon as he's done with that song, he stops, takes a breather, and then plays it again because it's literally the only song he knows. Yeah. It's just him playing that song over and over for 15 minutes. And then everyone's booing, and he takes a bow with a big smile on his face. Like,
thank you.
He runs off. They're not saying boo. They're saying boo McCaskey. They're saying boo orange.
I was saying boo orange.
Oh man,
I love this idea. I can we write to George McCaskey, take some flute lessons?
This is so much. Just send him a certificate in the mail. Good for 10 free flute lessons and one pair of buckled shoes. Way to put a Nike swoosh on the side of the shoe, and it just says Air Georgie.
And you see the shoes after all the time stepping on the field of the halftime shows, they're all stained with grass stains, and he just,
but when the field itself, the sodded Soldier Field's bad, he starts changing the length of the cleats on his buckle shoes. He's like, I'm gonna have to go with a quarter or three quarters of an inch
cleated buckle shoes. Oh my god,
he has the little tool to put to take the cleats on and off, and he's changing the length of his cleats. He's like, I want to have a good grip out there. I don't want to slip on the turf.
Yeah, because I don't think buckled shoes would go very well on the turf.
God.
Oh, I love this idea. This is great.
This is too good. This is so much better than Ding Dong George.
Yeah. Well, it's Ding Dong George with a flute.
The Ding Dong flautist.
Oh, no. Well, you know, the flute thing is something we slowly built up. When you said Ding Dong George for the first time, I almost couldn't breathe. I just lost it. And now we have that. Just imagine him in tights and buckled shoes in the middle of the field during halftime, just emphatically playing the flute, hopping around the Bear logo. And so everyone just starts booing. They're tired of hearing it.
They're like, George, you can't stand on the logo. It's in the center. And he's like, why can't I hear you over the sound of the beautiful music I'm making?
And as he's wearing those tights, he still has like his George McCaskey like ID badge on, the ID badge just swinging back and forth as he's playing.
His lanyard is just flailing around. His lanyard has a picture of him and it says dong comma ding.
Oh, that's why we need these laughs.
Oh god. Oh man. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, we gotta end on this great note, and then we're gonna have to expand a little further on our ding dong flutist idea.
Oh, I know. But that's gonna do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. That's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com. Or ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears, 31 to -7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down...